Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast. It's me, Rob, from the YouTube channel MotoBob. Unfortunately, I'm not joined by Tim today because we're at EICMA in Milan, but subbing in, who better than Rob of the famous channel Motofeels and Rob Hamilton?
Double Rob. Triple Rob.
Yeah, exactly. So we've had the opportunity to hang out a little bit. We're at Insta360 Stand, who sponsor both of us, which is very nice indeed.
Yes, it is.
But also, we've been cohabiting for a couple of days, and it's been pretty awesome. The show is mind-blowing, isn't it?
It is. It's very busy today, as you can probably tell in the background. There's a lot going on. I've probably seen 60% of it.
Yeah.
And I've been here most of the days.
We had the press day right at the beginning where it was sort of pretty quiet. Then it's more of an industry day the next day and it gets a little bit busier.
And then it's
getting busier and busier and busier until you can barely move. But we thought we'd take the opportunity to sit down, have a chat and find out a little bit about Rob, the work he does, the bikes he likes. And we'll talk a little bit maybe about cameras as well, given that we're here at Insta360.
Yes.
So let's start off by telling the audience a little bit about your channels and what sort of content you make, because the main channel, Motofeels, is what you're best known for, right?
Yep.
And that's cameras predominantly and riding bikes and everything in between, I guess.
I almost don't know what Motofeels is about. but it's mainly all camera sort of stuff. I try to teach the best methods of how to use your camera, how to get the most out of it, Insta360s in general.
Yep.
And how to create a story while you were on your motorcycle.
And you started that because of Instagram?
Yes. Yeah, I was a photographer first. I started up a YouTube channel, an Instagram channel called Motofeels. I started one up called Portrait Feels, and I started one up called Base Feels. And I said, whichever one takes off is the one I'll pursue.
Right.
And thankfully, Motofeels just took off.
That's super interesting. I suppose, like, we've met a lot of content creators here this week, which has been something I've noticed every year coming to EICMA. There's more and more and more people, you know, having a go at social media. But I think you're right. You've just got to try different stuff. That would be the advice I give to people. Keep trying, you know, 100 posts, 200 posts.
Absolutely.
And you'll eventually find something that does take off, that resonates with the audience.
Yep.
And you just pivot to that.
Yeah,
and
that's
put
right.
all your energy into it. And that's how you'll grow. And so does that mean you've actually ditched the other accounts now? Or do you kind of dabble a little bit?
No, I did. I ditched them. I just renamed them.
Deleted?
Not delete. I don't think you can delete them.
Just dormant.
Just dormant. Just pause them.
That's interesting, man. And then that's led you on to Rob Hamilton, the second channel, which is a different flavor.
It is. That was interesting. So I was into camping and everything. And it was always that thing, I struggle sleeping in general. And there's a few creators that make camping ASMR videos. One in particular called Go4x4. He's in a four-wheel drive, got his dog. And I found it so relaxing, so therapeutic. And I thought, this is really nice. Mm. I reckon I could do something like this. And I wanted to help people that are like me that just, you know, struggle to wind down at the end of a day or struggle to sleep. So I call it an anxiety content. Anxiety-free content. So you can turn it on, you let it go in the background, it's all nature sounds and everything, nice and relaxing, you watch me set up, and it's almost that thing of like, you're watching, and you're like, oh, what's he doing now? Oh, now what's he doing? Now what's he doing?
Like constant curiosity that pulls you through the video.
Yeah, and then people are just like, man, I just can't believe I watched you camp for half an hour. It felt like it was 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, and then people, just resonate with it because it is relaxing. And I try to really capture that vibe, even when you go for a motorcycle ride, through the mountains and everything. Sometimes when you just stick a camera on, it doesn't capture that feeling. So it's a lot of work, but I try to get drone shots. Insta360 is always a massive help.
Mm.
Moving it around, make it interesting for the viewer. And trying to really encapsulate the vibe of each ride. And they're all different, of course. Sometimes it's raining, sometimes it's sunny.
Do you ever get in a sticky situation? Like, I always think that when you're out there camping on your own and you're shooting and there's a lot going on, have you ever got stuck or has anybody chased you? that's an insight into my personality, but I'm just watching it like, something's got to go wrong eventually.
Eventually, I know. And I do get nervous. Like, don't get me wrong, before I go out every time.
It's like a buzz.
The thoughts are like, is this video going to be any good?
Hmm.
What's the weather like? What's the sun doing? But then, what if I get stuck in mud? What if I just stack it big time in the middle of nowhere? Like, what am I going to do? Do I film all this? Do I just take it?
But you might not encounter anybody, I guess.
That's right.
That's so wild. It just doesn't like really happen in the UK. It's so population dense that even if I go and try and find somewhere to shoot a review for half an hour, someone come ask you what you're doing, come and chat to you.
Well, I try to go to the places where there's just no people. You got to just find the camping spots where there's no toilets and you're sweet.
I mean, has its downsides, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. I love nature, man. I think the worst I've had is on night four, right at the end. I came down this slick mud, like a mud slick. It was nice and steep.
Yeah.
And I had the Pirelli Rally STRs.
Yes. And they're fine, right? But
when they're, you know, got at least 30% tread.
Yeah.
I was down. It was pretty smooth, and I couldn't get up this damn hill. I couldn't get out of the thing. I was there for probably about 4 hours.
Really?
Just trying to get the thing up there, and it was on a gradient. It was an uphill and on a gradient as well. So every time I went up, the back end would just kick out and just tip, and then there was a massive mud puddle at the bottom. So then the bike would just slide down almost in the mud puddle, and I'm trying to drag it out. This is the street scrambler, by the way.
Yeah, not. I mean, it's decent. They do use those at the off-road experience in the UK, actually.
Oh, right, okay.
So you've got the option to ride a Tiger or a street scrambler. Maybe they have the 1200s as well now. But it's not. It's an interesting choice of bike, isn't it? It's not necessary. I mean, maybe we'll talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure.
When we move on.
Yeah, sounds
but
good.
But I do want to touch more on that channel because it's like super interesting as well. I just mentioned this approach of uploading lots and lots of content and seeing whether something sticks and then really focusing on that and doubling down on that. But that is exactly what didn't happen with this channel, where you uploaded one video and it just kind of went boom. I mean, well, how many views did that first camping trip get?
It got over 1 million views before I could release the second video.
Crazy. And what's it on now? Well, did it kind of plateau off?
It did. It's probably on 2 or 3 million. The second video is the one that really took off. That's on 5.5 million now or something.
Wow.
That was ridiculous. That was a crazy time.
So do you feel like that shows that now, after a few years of creating content, you've, you know, got more of an instinct for what's going to work? Or do you feel like it was just a happy coincidence, or do you feel like maybe it was a good observation that you could apply a different approach from another niche to biking? Or
yeah, I think viewers in the motorcycle realm, I feel like we strive on adventure.
Yeah.
You know, like we love a good long way around, for example. You
yeah,
know,
totally.
It's just that motorcycle adventure, and this is what that sort of is as well. And there's no talking, there's no loud music or anything like that. It's a different, it's a complete different approach. I didn't think it was going to go as well as it did.
Right.
But obviously, I was super stoked that it did.
Yeah.
And yeah.
How many are you on now? How many videos?
I'm up to 928. So 28.
Wow.
28 videos, almost 200 subs.
Well, it's a lot of work. I admire and respect that because I know how long it takes just to pull over and get one shot riding past the camera, let alone, you know.
That's right. And then if it's raining as well. So I like to go out when it's raining because you get that nice ASMR-y rain sounds and everything. And most people don't go out camping when it's raining. So it brings a different vibe.
Nice and quiet.
But then you've got mud to deal with. When you put your side stand down, the bike sinks. Like this stuff you got to think about just to go back and get your camera.
Totally, yeah. Well, yeah, it's super interesting. One of the things we were talking about earlier was just the reception from the audience and how that can be very varied. I mean, clearly you're going to get a lot of positive comments from people who find that sort of content either helpful or inspiring or just cool to watch. Equally, there's the kind of bad side of it where you get a bit of critique for the gear. So what's that kind of like, and how do you deal with it, I suppose?
I don't know. Like, I don't even really, I don't reply to those comments because it's just sort of like, what do you say? Like, clearly I'm there making content that's interesting. If I just rocked up to a campsite with a swag.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, cool, here we go. Like, what are you going to do? Like, how's that going to be interesting to the viewer? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then I bring a table, I bring a chair, I use the Lone Rider moto tent, so I'll park my bike in there. It's like, yeah, you don't need it at all to have a good time moto camping.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also each to their own. Like, you do you, you know what I mean? If you want to take a house with you, take a house. If you want to just take a sack with you, take a sack. I just try to make it interesting and show that you can actually take all this stuff with you as well and make really nice meals. I'd like to make my meals interesting.
Yeah, know? That's a big part of it as well, isn't it? Like the kind of experience of seeing someone cook and
over the
how
fire
you do that.
And all that. Yeah, it's
exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly, vibes, absolute vibes. So that leads me on to, like, I presume you get sent more and more moto camping stuff now as a result of those videos. So is there anything that surprised you as like an awesome moto specific camping thing, or anything that you just use that you, you know, couldn't live without on those trips?
I recently camped, my latest one, night 27, I camped in a hammock.
Right.
And this thing takes up no space, like size of your fist.
Yeah.
I think that's just going to come with me every time I go camping, regardless if I'm in a tent or whatever, because you just need two trees, man.
Yeah.
And you can have a full-on couch just swinging, relaxing, watching the sunrise, sunset.
And you can put a tarp over, I guess.
You can, yeah, absolutely. That's what I did in the last one, so you can protect yourself. But I mean, like, yeah, if I got my tent, I'm just going to pack the hammock.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, it's just nice. You can have a full-on little setup at your home, at your campsite.
What about luggage? What's your recommended go-to for loading up something like a street scrambler?
Street scrambler. So I was using the Lone Rider moto, not the moto bags, the Lone Rider dry bags, just stacked on top of each other on the back.
Mm.
A bit top heavy.
Yes.
And the scrambler, you can really notice the weight as soon as you put any kind of bag on it. Moscow Moto sent me their 80 liter Reckless. And that looks awesome on the scrambler. I think it really suits the contour. But that's the best luggage option for me so far.
Sweet. Yeah.
It hugs the bike. It's nimble. You know what I mean? You can still do things.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the street scrambler then, because that is like probably for your social accounts, like the, you know, Instagram account when you were first growing that. It's almost like your signature thing, right? And I experienced that. I had a street twin when I started on YouTube, and that became, you know, I got a lot of people who own that bike as well. So, I mean, what made you choose that bike for a start?
Yeah, funny, because I was into cafe races and I hated the idea of having a scrambler. I thought it would look ridiculous, the high pipe. I was like, who's going to buy these things? But then I took the old school air-cooled scrambler with the arrow pipe.
Those are cool.
And I was like, this is sick. And I actually had it over a couple of nights. And that was it. I was in love. And I didn't know it was about the 270 degree crank that made that sound, that nice, like, thumpy.
Yeah.
And so I had a Bonneville at the time, and I was like, how the hell do I make this sound like that?
Right,
but you
sound
just
insane.
Can't. Yeah.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is bzzzing. So that's what, yeah, I had to.
Wait, you borrowed that off somebody or hired it?
I borrowed it off someone, yeah.
Oh, and that got you kind of.
You know, when you connect with a bike.
Yeah.
And you
totally.
Just, I have to have one.
That's the same for me. I don't know. I was already reviewing quite a lot of bikes at that time. I had a like Kawasaki ER6, like a really cheap, you know, naked bike. But I was already working my way through bikes at dealers, making YouTube videos. And I rode a street twin, almost the same. It was just the sound and the feel of the engine and the sort of weightiness when you're on the throttle. It sort of just has a really satisfying nature to it. I just couldn't get it out of my head after that.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm
going to
go and get one. So yeah, I think they're excellent, but I guess it has its limitations in terms of like motor camping.
Oh yeah. So I took that thing around New South Wales. It was a 5,000 kilometer trip right around New South Wales in the middle of nowhere. It's on my YouTube channel, 8 episodes, I think. And there's right in the middle, we hit this dirt road. As we were riding down the dirt road, the heavens opened up and I've never witnessed the storm so severe than what it was when we were riding down this dirt trail that quickly turned to clay.
Right.
So quickly, and we had to turn around. We already were pretty deep into it. I dropped the bike 3 times. On the second drop, I went to click in first gear, but there was no lever.
Oh man.
And I had a look and the lever's just dangling. Mm. And it wasn't that it shredded the teeth on the actual, I don't know what you call it, the gear selector.
Mm.
The whole thing was snapped on the inside. The shift shaft, the welds had snapped on the inside because there's no foldable levers on them.
Mm, totally.
They're not really made for adventure riding, I guess.
No.
You can take them out from some green trails, have a bit of fun, like, yeah, but when you're out in the middle of nowhere and that happens. So luckily, I was stuck in second gear.
Mm.
So I managed to ride it at about 4 hours in second gear to a town. We had no luck. I pulled the engine cover off, the clutch plates out, and tried under a tree in the sun. I had a look at it and worked out that we couldn't actually do anything about it. Put it all back together. And then luckily there was a motorcycle shop about 6 hours away who pinned it right, like all the way to the town, and we rode and tried to meet him halfway, put on the back of a ute, and then they just bush mechanicked and welded it all up and we're back on the road again.
That's amazing.
It was epic. It was a good story, and it was a good bit of tension in the middle of the series.
I was just thinking as well, like if there's one gear that you want to be stuck in, it's probably second.
It is, yeah. And you can still squeeze like 70 or 80 Ks out of it.
Good,
like,
old second.
Comfortably, yeah, that's
pull
right.
away, yep. just about.
Yep.
Talkie bike.
Just drag that the clutch a little bit. Yeah, that's right.
And that was the thing that maybe probably was like made you realize that you had to look elsewhere for something to do the motor camping trips.
That's right.
What is it that you pivoted over to then?
So I needed something a bit more capable. So when the T7s came out, I always had my eye on them. I was like, these look sick. And then getting into Dakar and all that, I was like, you know, I love the whole rally tower setup. And I knew I was going to have one.
Right.
And I just kept seeing, I was like, that's going to be my next bike. And then I eventually did get one. And now I did this. I was doing wheelies and I injured my ligaments in my right hand. Big healing process. It's a big bike. It takes a little bit to get used to, but yeah.
That's the hard side of riding a living.
Yeah.
And quite often if I do off-road experiences and stuff like that, if there's anything that looks at all sketchy, I'm just like, I'll probably get around this one, you know, because I've got something tomorrow to shoot and the next day and the next day.
That's how it works, yeah.
But it is, I hope it mends up quickly and you can get back on the road. Are you still riding a little bit though?
I am, yeah. I took a Ducati Desert X out yesterday.
Yeah.
And rode around Lake Como.
Yeah, so a well-earned rest. Like I was saying earlier, we were doing every day at the show for pretty much 5 days, and I think it was a wise thing. That was my lowest day. I was out of energy, only managed to get one video done, and I thought a ride up to Lake Como, you know, on a good bike, a nice easy day is probably just what you needed.
It was, I've only ridden in Europe twice. Once I was in Switzerland. It was my very first YouTube channel.
Right.
Just the action camera on the front. And then just hitting through the twisties on an old school BMW R80.
Oh,
and it was
nice.
Amazing. That was like a 1970s, smelling the oil burning.
Yeah, yeah.
And just really giving it some. And then this time on a Desert X, obviously a little bit more advanced in technology. And then riding around all Lake Como. I've never been there before, obviously. And it was an incredible experience. Yeah.
It looks phenomenal up there. It is every bit as spectacular, as you would expect. We did a ride around there last year when we went to the MV Agusta factory, myself and Tim, and I've never seen anything like it, really.
Yeah, epic mountains and everything, the ice caps. It was cold.
Yeah.
It was about 6-7 degrees.
It's beautiful buildings, little cafes and things like that.
People just wandering around, cows with the bells on.
Yeah.
That was so good.
You think that's a cliche, but...
Yeah.
It happens. How did the Desert X compare to Tenere then?
So, yeah. The Desert X is definitely faster, probably a bit more athletic.
Yeah.
You have all the different riding modes. You can adjust how much engine braking you want in all the different riding modes. Suspension, traction control, ABS, all that sort of stuff. So you have all this tech, ride-by-wire, which is fun. It's cool. But I feel like... For me, if I'm going to be doing some enduro stuff, I want something that's a lot more basic. And I'm happy with basic.
Mm.
So the T7 literally just has one button, ABS on and off.
Yeah.
And that's it.
This is it, isn't it? I think that's what people love about it so much is just the simplicity. Previously, the affordability, the price has gone up a bit, I think, because it's become more popular. And just, the sort of bare bones nature of it. And I always wonder, having ridden it plenty, I thought it was great off-road. But I always wonder if owners who ride maybe that one tier of bike above, 890 Adventure from KTM, the Tiger 900, the Desert X, I guess, or that might be another step above, whether that feels tempting to you. But I think maybe that's the thing as to why people are so passionate about the Tenere is because you still think, if I was going off-road, I'd still take my existing bike.
Exactly, right? That's right.
It's crazy. And so how did that transform the trips then, moving from the Street Scrambler to the Tenere? Is it, you feel like you can do more extreme riding?
Oh,
or
absolutely.
Is it just more comfortable and easy?
It definitely is comfortable. I put you get the screen on at least.
Yeah.
So it's not a naked bike, so you're not fatigued as much.
Yeah.
Because for me, when you ride to your motor camping spot or whatever, that's when you relax. You go there, you relax, so it doesn't matter if you get fatigued with wind in your face. For me, it's a little bit different. When I get to my camping spot, that's when my work really starts.
Yeah,
so I need to be on the game. And the T7 just helps me maintain my energy levels, really.
Yeah, totally.
And it is much more comfortable. It can handle the weight a lot better.
Mm.
It's a lot safer in that aspect as well, because I think the brakes are fantastic. I mean, this is a 2018 Street Scrambler I'm talking about, so it's still got the Nissan brakes.
Not a strong point. Nah. Yeah, I remember that on mine as well, even on the road version. Sometimes you squeeze and...
Nothing's really happening there.
And it's not lightweight either.
No, that's
it's got
right.
a bit of momentum.
It does.
And you're still going.
Yeah, and they're like, yeah, it's heavier than the 2019. The 2019 is when they really upped everything. They made it lighter, more powerful, and with Brembo brakes.
Totally. That's the one to get.
It is the one to get. I should have just held out, man. Damn it.
But even still, it wouldn't touch, I don't think, the Tenere in terms of its capability.
Right.
And I guess you've modded this bike as well, given that you've got to, you know, carry some stuff and, you know, be a bit self-sufficient when you're out there.
Yeah.
What sort of changes would you make to the Tenere to make it kind of ideal for what you're doing?
Definitely crash bars. I've dropped this thing about, I reckon, over 50 times.
Yeah?
Yeah. Mostly on the left-hand side, and the crash bars I'm using have saved it. No cracked plastics or anything.
Where are they from?
SRC Adventure Moto. So this is a brand in Queensland, but I'm not sure if they're worldwide or anything.
Right.
There's only one, like the left-handed side's a bit pushed in because it's been just dropped down so many times. Mm-hmm. When I stacked it, I dropped it on the right-hand side. That wiped out the whole right-hand side, a bit of the exhaust. That's a downside of the T7, is the exhaust is low mounted. Mm-hmm. So if that gets pushed in, it rubs against the swing arm. Mm-hmm. If that happens, you have to replace the whole swing arm.
Yeah, I heard about this.
It's bad. And then even the bracket that holds the exhaust on, if that breaks off, it can be classed as
a write-off. Because it's welded.
It is. It's welded to the frame. Ridiculous.
Crash bars are essential then.
Crash bars, definitely. But then, you know, you can just do all your little heated grips and stuff. I'm trying to make it like look cool, so I've got the Kellerman indicators, get rid of the big things.
Yeah.
Indicators for me have to go. But the next big one now is the suspension. Because the front suspension is very soft. It definitely needs a bit of work to it.
There's the new extreme version, isn't there? There's the Tenere World Raid, which gets the big tank and the long suspension. Or now the Tenere Extreme, which you don't have to have the big tank. You can just get the kind of suspension upgrade. Looks quite cool. I don't know, though. It feels like also this year they launched the Explore Edition at EICMA, which has lower suspension and luggage racks as standard and the quick shifter.
Oh, right.
And it's like... How many variants of Tenere 700 do we really need?
I didn't even know. I thought there was only like the World Raid and that was it.
Nah. Well, maybe it's different for us because the Extreme launched in Europe first and then now it's been launched for next year for the UK, for example. But I believe, Extreme. Oh, and there's a World Rally and there's the Rally version as well. So I think there's like across the globe, maybe 5-6 variants now.
Really?
And it just feels maybe it'd be nice if you could just get the suspension as an accessory when you buy the bike and just spec it up like that way rather than lots of different packs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's an incredibly capable bike. And I remember riding both the standard bike and the World Raid off-road at the Adventure Centre, which is, it's hard to find good places to ride off-road in the UK. Like I say, it's so dense with people that it's a little bit tricky.
Sure.
And a lot of farmers and landowners are really trying to cut back on how much people can ride on their land. But it's great, obviously, to go to these Adventure Centres where you can just loop round and really get a feel for the bike and you're not really concerned about, you know, being in the right place or where you're going. And it's a real good chance to back-to-back them. And the difference on the World Raid, even though it was slightly bigger with more fuel, the suspension transformed it. The stuff that they put on it is just, the quality is amazing. It's a massive step up. So wholeheartedly recommend that. And I think...
Yeah.
With that suspension, it was almost certainly, I think, the best adventure bike I've ridden in terms of just feeling confident off-road.
Okay.
Like, I'm not, like I was saying earlier, I'm slightly risk-averse in those scenarios because I've got work to do in the following days and weeks.
Exactly, that's right. It's a lovely one.
But that's a bike that just had me throwing it up and down little climbs with rocks on them and stuff and not really feeling like intimidated because it just felt so controlled and extra travel. That it was like very confidence inspiring.
Yeah.
Such a good bike.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. I was just thinking as well, the other side of having crash bars is like lots of good places to mount cameras.
Yes.
So like talk us through your camera rig. Maybe this is just for my satisfaction, but I'd love for anyone who likes cameras back home listening to maybe find out as well. What sort of things do you take with you to capture a trip?
Yep. So I have my main camera. I use a Lumix S5.
Yep.
That's for when I'm at the campsite, have it on a tripod. One camera. I get asked how many cameras I take. I get asked if there's a film crew. It's just me. Tripod, Rode VideoMic Pro, and that's my campsite setup.
Got it.
And that's it. When I'm riding, bit of a different story. I have a POV, helmet mount camera.
Yep.
This captures my POV, which I don't really use that much. My main camera that I use is the Insta360 X3. That's the one I use, hit record, If it's in front of you, you're getting the angle right to the right in front, nice and smooth. You've got one back at your face. You've got one to the side. You can look up into the sky if you want.
Yeah.
And that's just from that one mount.
Yeah.
And then I can bring it around. I like to get it nice and close to the road.
Yeah.
So you get that sense of movement. You can watch the suspension do some work. And then, and it's just the selfie stick, the Insta360 selfie stick, and the claw mount. And I just move that around, and that's it.
So it's a fairly minimal setup.
It is.
And actually, like, maybe that's kind of inspiring for people to know that you can make videos that get 3-4 million views or whatever on your second one without having to have a crew, like you say, or buy the most fancy cameras. A lot of it you can do with, you know, an SLR, a tripod, a decent audio setup, and then something on the bike to capture that riding footage.
Exactly.
And I think also just encourage people to think about, exactly like you say, using chin-mounted footage as little as possible. I think YouTube's just become full of people riding around, chatting into
their... Yeah, exactly, absolutely.
What can you add? Even with your phone, just taking little B-roll clips and that sort of thing. So, yeah, super interesting. But yeah, one thing that might be a little bit of a game changer that you've had chance to try out yesterday on that ride on the Desert X up to Lake Como was the new Insta360 action camera, which I think we've both been pretty impressed with. It's got a lot of features that I think are going to take things up a notch in the action camera world.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think of it, and what are the things that you think are useful now?
The Ace Pro?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So I think the biggest thing that I'm most impressed with is the nighttime shooting.
Yeah.
So you've had a look at it. It was a little brief moment. I went through a tunnel, and we watched it on my Mac on the bigger screen, and it was so smooth, so buttery. The light, the dynamics, everything looked incredible. The best I've seen in an action camera so far, like to date.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. I think the thing that is just mind-blowing about it is it has its own AI chip built in, and it can process the footage in real time so that when it's saving it to your memory card, stuff like nighttime has just been sharpened up and denoised. And
big time,
also, it can pick out... we've been told pre-launch, but it can pick out highlights. If it detects something interesting happening in the clip, it'll mark that for you so you know later to kind of pull it out.
Yep.
I can't wait to get back. After seeing the footage that you captured yesterday, to get back and try mine out, it just looks stunning.
The AI thing was, it works. There was a moment I pulled over and I thought I should, because you can actually manually tap the...
highlights.
Yeah, the highlights, yeah. But it did it automatically, like very clever.
Yeah.
And then it's got a whole bunch of other features going on as well.
So that might be in your rig once it's been announced.
Absolutely.
So maybe you will go to chin mount. After saying all that,
you'll
just do chin shots all the time.
Yeah,
from
that's
that
right.
Camera.
Yeah, exactly.
a little bit about the show then, because you've had a chance to, like we said, probably only seen over the 3-4 days we've been here, half the show, maybe a little bit more, 60%. It's for us, it's been just about trying to get to the stands that have the bikes that we're most excited to see. But for you, you've maybe just been wandering around a little bit more, trying to take it in. Is there anything specifically that's caught your eye as impressive or exciting for the next, you know, model year?
Oh, I don't know. Not really.
Really?
There's a lot going on, but...
That's not really your...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it isn't. Like, I mean... Like, this is my area right now.
Where I am
right now, this is it. It's exciting. There's all this new gear that, like, e-bikes especially. Like, that's just become such a massive thing in Europe. Like, not so much in Australia. We are getting there, but seeing how much it's growing and what's happening around the world is super impressive.
Yeah.
But even some bikes I've never heard of. Like, there's lots of different brands that just haven't reached Australia yet.
Right.
So even that's just sort of mind-opening, just how much they're, production-wise is happening.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many up-and-coming, especially kind of Asian brands as well, and they're starting to look really impressive. One bike that stood out to me yesterday that we shot was the CF Moto 450 MT, it's called. It's an adventure bike that looks a little bit like a Tenere, but probably a much lower price point, a little 450, stuff like that. The quality is looking ridiculously good on it now, and it looks like a great alternative if you don't quite have the sort of Tenere budget.
Sure.
Talking about the electrics, we're sat right by the cake stand
ones.
As well.
Yeah, that's
oh
right.
Oh my gosh. What's that one called that looks like a dirt bike? Is it the Bronco or something like that?
I have no
idea.
You
know the one there? You can see it.
Yeah.
That looks fantastic as well. And it's actually more and more that sort of thing that's catching people's eyes and looking interesting versus some of the incremental updates, I think, from the big manufacturers. I mean, like stuff like the Fireblade, for example, a big headline bike from Honda. Looks really good. Lots of little changes, but I think it just doesn't quite have that wow factor this year of like some of the brand new electrics, some of the brand new kind of CF motos and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's
yeah, sure.
Interesting. What's your plans next then after this? You're heading back to Oz and then healing up.
Healing up. I'll take one day to heal, one day to sort of push out the jet lag a little bit, and then it's back to camping. Next year is the big year. Next year I'm planning some big time travels. Tasmania, New Zealand, Himalayas, that's booked in. Hopefully a lap around Australia. That's a big bucket list of mine that I just have to do.
How long does that take?
I'm going to take about 2 to 3 months.
On the Tenere?
Yeah, camping out. But like, I want to take my time, really absorb everything. I would love to do a Simpson Desert crossing. That'll have to be another time on a more enduro suitable bike.
Got you.
Not so much the T7.
Yeah.
And then hopefully ride to ECMA next year from, I don't know, a London maybe?
Yeah, somewhere like that.
Yep.
Yeah, that sounds super cool. And all the while you'll be mainly focusing on camping videos when you're doing that kind of tour stuff, or is it like trying to do a little bit of everything just to...
It'll be a bit of everything. It's going to be split on both channels. So the Moto Feels channel will have the vlog and all my struggles and everything I go through. The Rob Hambleton camping channel, that'll be anxiety free. So you won't be having to worry about me being sad or like depressed or like stuff this, I want to just go home. It'll just look amazing all the time, and it'll just be documenting everything, not even just the camping side, but it's just going to be like a nice ambient experience watching me like hop on a boat for example and loading up my bike.
Totally.
And just capturing the essence of the surroundings.
Yeah, and I think the thing that sprung to my mind when you're talking about that content being anxiety-free is it sounds like the perfect antidote to some of the EICMA content we've been putting out.
Yeah.
Where it's like super busy.
It is.
And I'm throwing specs at the camera and we're cutting loads of B-roll and it's just very hectic and we'd be doing like 4 videos a day. So if you feel like chilling out a little bit after watching us stomping around EICMA trying to cover all the bikes, then definitely check out Rob's camping channel and Motorfields as well. If you like your cameras, you like your riding, you like your Triumphs and your Street Scramblers, then I thoroughly recommend giving it a watch. Also on Instagram, it's moto_feels.
Yep.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Lots of lovely photos still.
Thank you.
It's got a nice vibe. Also, nice selection of riding gear as well. I think that's another thing that you kind of like.
I think that was probably like one of the biggest things about ECMA that I enjoyed, is because I've been working with these brands for the past couple of years and I finally got to meet pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
And it was just nice having a bit of a face-to-face communication, have a chat.
Yeah, totally.
And now they know I'm a real person.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially when you edit on your own, ride on your own.
That's right.
Do all that
exactly.
Kind of thing. It's so nice to just be around people and meet people. And
like yourself.
Exactly.
It's good to meet you. Yeah.
Well, you were top of the list. And then the brands. And then Juan, who manages our brand deals, is down the bottom probably.
Yeah, but. That's right. Here he is.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time, mate. It's been
pleasure.
Nice to catch up with you. Keep listening. We'll be back with more podcasts in the next couple of weeks. Many thanks for listening as well. And we'll see you next time.